Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I'm your host, Cody, and we are continuing the theme of September, which is comic books being turned into TV shows, or adapted into TV shows. I don't know how I put it before. So we've talked about two different things. Last week I didn't mention what I was going to do. I was going to talk about, because I needed to do some research on what it was. But I have finally come to that. So this week's episode, we are going to be talking about Lock and Key. Lock and Key has had a very tumultuous road to being anything other than a comic book, or beyond being a comic book, I should say. And I'll go over a little bit of that, and I'll tell you a little bit about the book. The book is a comic series created by Joe Hill and illustrated by Gabriel Rodriguez over at IDW Publishing. IDW Publishing has done a lot of things. They've had their hands in Transformers, G.I. Joe. They've done 30 Days a Night by Steve Niles. They've done, I think, Ninja Turtles. They've done a lot of adaptation properties from Disney and Warner and all sorts of different stuff that they've done. So, you know, pretty good stuff. But for Lock and Key, for the basic premise of the story itself, see if there's a... I don't want to give a whole plot description because it's super long. Here we go. This is a good one. So Lock and Key revolves around three siblings who, after the gruesome murder of their father, moved to their ancestral home in Massachusetts, only to find out the house has magical keys that gives them a vast array of powers and abilities. Little do they know, a devious demon also wants the keys and will stop at nothing to attain them. For the people who don't know who Joe Hill is, Joe Hill is Stephen King's son, I believe oldest son, if I'm not mistaken. His real name is Joe King, Joseph Hillstrom King, and he shortens it to Joe Hill as his writing name for no other reason than to, I believe... So he doesn't get lumped up with his father being the most prolific American writer ever to be, right, I guess. So he's done a lot of different things. He writes novels primarily. I can't even actually... say that he's done he's got a more varietied selection of books, of novels, than he does comic books. Comic books, he really only has a few of his, that's that. And he's done a bunch of short stories too, but his novels are pretty good, and I don't think I've talked to anybody about them on this show, he's got a bunch, and we'll talk about him another time. More in depth. Gabriel Rodriguez, the artist behind Lock and Key, whose art in this is spectacular, but in general is also super amazing, has done not a whole lot of work, but he's done quite a bit of things. He's from Chile. Santiago, Chile, yeah, there you go. And he's done a few other things other than Lock and Key, but there's talk of more Lock and Key coming up, which is pretty cool. And we'll go into a little bit more of that as we go into the details of the show, of the book itself, and then I'll go into the history of the what now is going to be a TV show. Pretty fun little story. is not for kids, as you can probably imagine after the description of brutal murder. The main focus is, again, the three kids, so the three Locke children. I guess the main one is Bodhi. But it does revolve around all of them. Mackenzie, Bodhi, and what is the brother's name? It escapes me and I don't have it in front of me. Man, that's gonna suck. Anyhow, Tyler? Yeah, Tyler. Woohoo! Oh, Lord Almighty, I had to think about that. Bodhi being the youngest, Kinsey being the middle child, the sister, and then Tyler the oldest. So after witnessing the death of their father, they didn't really witness it, but they were present when it happened. They were inside the house. He was outside. Anyways, they get whisked away to their ancestral home known as Key House. By the way, if you don't know, the name of the book and show is Lock and Key. Lock is spelled L-O-C-K-E. That's the last name of the family. And Key is the Key House, which plays into a whole different story of why it's called the Key House, but other than being a clever name. But it has reasons why it's called that. So the adventure really starts when they get moved back to the hometown of their mother and father, back in Massachusetts. Rendell is the name of the father who gets killed. He is the husband, the father of the kids. His role is very, very small for the most part in this book. And it's probably series two. There's some flashback stuff from when he was younger, which we'll get into. It will get into that as you go along. For the most part, the cast itself is the three kids, Dodge, who is the demon. He has a real name, but that's the name he goes by, or she goes by. Wink, wink. Their mom, their uncle Duncan, and then there's a few minor characters of kids they go to school with and friends that become later on become more, I guess you could say, primary cast members. There's a few others too that are I don't want to say minor characters, but are pretty pretty well known characters as well. But it's pretty good little selection of characters. Let's see what else. I'm trying not to. I don't want to ruin too much of it because it's a super good book that everyone should read or listen to, and I'll get to that in a minute too. I think. I'm trying to think of who else is a main in this. I think that's primarily it. I want to say I'm looking up something while I'm talking to you, and you can, as I've mentioned on this particular podcast a few times. And I'll bring this up again. Not a sponsor, if you're an Amazon Prime member and you want to read some of these books, looks like almost all of them are on here. As part of Prime Reading part of being a Prime member, actually, I think I've said this last time, and I think I'm incorrect about it. If you're a Prime member, you might know about this. You do not have to be a Prime member to get this deal. But if you're a Prime member, you might know about it already. But for $5.99 a month, you can get a thing called Comicology Unlimited. And part of that is, for that $5.99, you can borrow up to, I think you can borrow a shit ton. I don't even know if there's a limit, tell you the truth. But they're digital comic books. It looks like almost every single issue, and even majority of the collections, are available. Yeah, I mean, it looks like almost all of them are on there. Except for the one-shots are not, it looks like. But you don't really need those. Those are fun to read, but they're not crucial to the story. Yeah, you can read a lot of them. Anyways, so if you want to read them, and you want to read them for cheap, and you don't want to have to buy them, even if you do want to buy them, you can buy them digitally. It's really good. They have a couple collections. You can do the collections. There's six different collections. For the six different volumes, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, six. And you can read right now. It looks like 1 through 4 are all borrowable through the Comixology Unlimited. I forgot to look this up before I started, so that's why I'm reading it off of the app. But so if you want to check that, they have individual issues on there as well. Looks like individual issues. Looks like they have almost all of them. Clockworks, Key in the Kingdom, Head Games. Oh, maybe they don't have all of them. What are the issues? Comixology issues 1 through 8 of 28. So you can do 28 of the issues. What are these ones? I'm so confused on what all these ones are. Welcome to Lovecraft. I'm sorry, I'm Head Games, Crown of Shadows. Nope. Looks like the last collection is not borrowable, but you can probably buy it pretty cheap. Actually, I'll probably tell how much it is. Actually, I don't know if it'll tell me on here. It doesn't. It's just wish list. You can't do it through the app. I'm on the website. But yeah, so you can at least check out the first volume or so if you want to. The other way you can get it actually is... if you want to listen to all of them read by a full cast of characters, there's actually an audio drama version of it that you can get from Audible. It's 13 hours long. It's a full cast that includes Haley Joel Osment is in it, Kate Mulgrew, who, if you're a Joe Hill fan, has read 2 audiobooks of his stuff. I believe Fireman and Nosferatu were both read by her. Kate Mulgrew, if you don't know who that is the Starfleet captain from the show from Star Trek. What is that one? She played Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager. I know someone on this, listening to this is screaming right now at me, but I forgot what it was, the name of it. But she was famously from, I would say, arguably the second most popular Star Trek show, Voyager, and most popularly now known as Red from Orange is the New Black, the show on the Netflix, which she's still on. I'm behind on it, but I'm pretty sure. So she's pretty cool. She's in that. The audio production is, like I said, 13 hours long. It has over 50 voice actors. I think it's over 50. It might be less than 50. I can't remember. It says here, almost 50 voice actors. It has appearances by Joe Hill himself, Gabriel Rodriguez, and Stephen King all show up at one point in the reading of it. It is a fantastic production. It has sound effects. It has music. Like I said, a full voice cast. Terrific way to listen to it. If you don't want to read it, because there are some people who don't like reading. I read all the comic books, and then I saw that. I got on... The nice thing, what I got when the audio version came out, is they're actually offering it for free, so you could actually get it for, like, the first, like, month or two or something like that. You could get it. It was pretty awesome. And I think I mentioned it on the main podcast a couple years ago when it came out in 2016. It's still available, or 2015, it's still available to get through Audible, and you can, I might be able to tell you how much it is without having to do too much work, it's a pretty spectacular whole everything, really. The production's really good, the voice acting's really spectacular and fun, and you can... they don't miss a beat. They do the whole thing, and it is fucking amazing. And there is a way it's $25 on Amazon, on Audible. If you want to check it out, you can do that. It's pretty spectacular. But like I said, you can and that's all of that's all 13 hours and 26 minutes, as it says here, of Lock and Key. The crazy thing is, if you've ever read it and you want to check out the audio, you should do it, because it makes you relive it in your brain. And as I listen to it on my drive to and fro work, I kept picturing in my mind the pages of the comic book, and it was pretty goddamn accurate to what it was. It was pretty cool. Like I said, the voice acting is pretty fucking good. And it's really fun. And like I said, the sound effects really help too. And they do a good job. Because, like, the thing I thought was really weird is, with a comic book, you see visuals of what needs to set the scene. So you're not, like, in a book, when you're reading a book, there's a lot of descriptive things, like, for example, Bodhi walks into a tall room with wooden walls and two very vast wooden doors, right? That's a terrible, not very good, but you know what I mean? Like that. In the comic book, you see that. You see Bodhi walk through a door into a vast wooden-walled room with high ceilings and two big doors, right? You see that visually drawn out in the book. They do a really good job in the audio of doing the description of it, but not giving you, not like weighing you down with too much of it, but enough to know what you're supposed to see, which of course is pretty awesome. So highly recommend checking that out. Highly recommend checking out the books themselves on Comixology Unlimited, if you want to do that. Do that. Do a month-long trial, I believe it is. They give you for Comixology Unlimited, and read them books for free. At least their first four volumes, which I think are issues 1 through 28, right? 6 times 4. No, it's not 28. It must be more than that. I don't know. Maybe there's less than that. I can't remember. I just looked it up and I didn't really count. But anyways, you can read the first four volumes I know collected together, which will probably get you want to read the rest of them. Did me. So check that out. And now we'll go over a little bit about the history of making this outside of the audio production, as well as the comic books and graphic novels. So way back in the day, in 2009... Right? Trying to look here. I think it's 2010. Dimension Films acquired the film and television rights for Welcome to Lovecraft from IDW Publishing. And with the intent of developing property as a feature with John Davis producing. John Davis, for the people who don't know, may not be a name you actually recognize, because his name isn't as popular, but his company, Davis Entertainment, has produced shit ton of movies. Starting way back with the original Predator, all the way up to this year's The Predator, and has so many movies to their credit, and TV shows, and TV movies. TV shows like The Blacklist, the ill-fated remake of Ironside I see on this list here. They did Alex Inc., I guess, is a newer show on TV. They did the movie Game Night earlier this year. They did the TV show Timeless, which I think is still going. That might not be right. They did the Victor Frankenstein movie with McAvoy and Harry Potter in it. They did the really good adaptation of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. They did the breakout hit Chronicle from everybody's favorite Josh Trank, who unfortunately career has gone sideways because of the terrible Fantastic Four movie. Not terrible. It's not his fault what happened to it, but we'll go into that another day. Josh Trank, his first movie, Chronicle, which is pretty cool, a dope-ass movie, but gave us Michael B. Jordan, as well as Dane DeHaan. Those two actually went on to do a lot of other stuff. Davis Entertainment has done so much stuff. From TV, like I said, TV to movies. Done a bunch of stuff that you would probably know if you looked at the list. His company was producing it. It was announced that in 2010 that Dimension had lost the adaptation rights to DreamWorks, with Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi signed on to develop and produce the project. Later that year, Steven Spielberg was joined as producer, the production became a TV series instead of a movie or a set of movies. I think that one part was movie, like one single movie, which is a fucking terrible shame way to do it. I'd never be able to done. A TV series, and they were planning to do a live-action show. And Josh Friedman was going to be writing episodes, not all of them, some of them, and actually a showrunner for them. For the people who don't know Josh Friedman, I don't blame you. His name is not hugely popular. He's very newish. He's written a few things. Some stuff I don't like. And I'm kind of glad he didn't go forward with the Lock and Key, because he bastardized one of my favorite movies into a TV show, and that is Terminator. He produced and wrote the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I loathe to this day. He wrote War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise one. The Black Dahlia with, is that Josh Hartnett? Isn't that one right? Yeah. He was credited as writing and producing The Lock and Key, but that is, I'll get to in a minute, didn't happen. He did produce and write one of my favorite shows that only lasted a season, called The Finder. That was a really good show. It was a spinoff of Bones, one of my other favorite shows. He's credited here, I didn't know this, as writing the new Terminator and the new Avatar movie. The Avatar, James Cameron Avatar, not the Airbender one, which listen to Friday's episode of the main show, and we'll talk about the big news on that as well. But that was Josh Friedman. Doesn't matter because he's not part of it anymore. Shortly after that, DreamWorks lost the the rights to that as well. Didn't lose the rights. They were working with things, never really went anywhere. And then Fox came along, and the adaptation landed for release on Fox. And they greenlit a pilot to be produced and or to be made by DreamWorks Television and KO Paper Products, which is the company from Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci. Which, by the way, I didn't mention those two. Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci are should be known for people who know the Transformers movies and the newer Star Trek movies, as well as Lost, a Mission Impossible 3, a bunch of other stuff that they've done. Television-wise, they worked on Xena and Hercules. They worked on Alias. They worked on Fringe. Hawaii 5-0, which they're still producers on. I don't think they write anymore for it. Sleepy Hollow show that was on Fox for 4 or 5 years. They produced the Scorpion TV show, which got canceled earlier this year. Limitless, which actually was an actually really good show. I actually liked that a lot, but didn't go any further. They are co-creators and writers and executive producers of the Star Trek Discovery show on what is ABC's or not ABC, CBS's streaming service, whatever that's called, CBS All Access, right? Is that what it's called? I don't fucking know. I should. I have no clue. And then they also did a show called Salvation, which is also, I believe, on actual television. No. Is it on television? Or it might be on CBS All Access as well. I don't know. I haven't actually watched that either. I don't know about that. But they have a show on called Salvation too, also on there. So that's them. They've done a lot of things. Some people would say good things. Some people would say bad things. But they have a very, very varied career. And I think they've done a lot of good stuff. I kind of was excited for them to be part of the Lock and Key stuff, especially since they're doing a TV show. I thought it was really good. Speaking of the pilot, you can actually watch the trailer for the pilot that was aired. The trailer for it was aired at Comic-Con in 2011. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 2011. You can see that it wasn't the best. That's all right. The pilot, like I said, the trailer for the pilot that was shown at Comic-Con in 2011, San Diego Comic-Con 2011, was received real well. I remember watching it there. I was excited. There's some fairly noteworthy, not like super noteworthy people in it. No real big names. Nick Stahl was probably the biggest name in that. I take that back. Jesse McCartney, who was a now forgotten actor and singer, I believe. He was cast as Ty Locke, which I think was a terrible choice because Ty needs to be a much bigger gentleman. He's supposed to be much, much more of a massive, imposing gentleman. At least by the comic books wise, and I think they could do better than him. They did in the trailer. If you've read the books or at least look at the art from the books, everybody but Bodhi looked a lot like their character. Well, actually, no, I take that back. Tyler and Dodge, the female Dodge, were the only two that actually looked like their characters. Bodhi, Nina, and Kenzie, or McKenzie, and Duncan, didn't really look like their comic book counterparts. But again, you're going from drawn images of fully created characters versus human beings. So I can't really say they did a terrible job, but Jesse McCartney, by far, the worst. But they did make him look like the way he dressed and the way he like wore his headphones and his hoodie up all the time. Did scream very Ty Locke to me. But he's not big enough person to play Tyler, if you ask me. Because Tyler's supposed to be a football star and I think a wrestler. I think he wrestled too. He might not have played football. He might have wrestled. Doesn't matter. You'll learn if you read it or listen to it. So that was the thing. That didn't go anywhere. They filmed it. They filmed the pilot, which to me, if I remember correctly, had way more than just the first issue in it and had a lot more of the first series, the first six issues. You saw stuff sprinkled in there. You never got to see anything with the keys actually do much other than you saw two of the keys in the trailer. One is the, I think you said the ghost key, and I think you see the, I think you see the door key, the travel key, I think, not the travel key. I can't remember what they're called right now. I can probably look up the keys, but I'm not going to. You can read about them. It's funner that way. But it's a key you can basically use on any door to go anywhere you want. But might be called the anywhere key. That can't be right though. That sounds dumb. I think I made that up. And I'm stupid for making it up. Anyways, so that didn't go through. Midway through last year, April 20th, it was announced that Hulu had ordered a pilot based on the comic series from Colton Q's Scott Dickerson. Or Derrickson and Lindsay Springer as producers. And then Scott Dirksen was set to direct the pilot. Scott, who later, he's done a few things in his career. Most notably, he directed and wrote Doctor Strange. For Marvel Comics or for Marvel Studios, but he is the creator of the Sinister series. I think is his biggest thing. He did a bunch of horror movies. He wrote a bunch. He's directed a handful. But he created the Sinister. So Sinister. He produced and wrote Sinister 2, but did not direct it. But most notable, he did an amazing job directing Doctor Strange. So pretty good, I would say. By far his most successful of anything, because Sinister was not great. Sinister 2, I didn't even watch because Sinister 1 did not throw me too much. Anyhow, so Scott was originally set to direct that, the Hulu one. Due to scheduling issues, he was replaced by Andy Muschietti, who, if you don't know that name, He directed and wrote It Chapter 1 and soon to be Chapter 2, which they're filming right now. So that's a pretty cool bridge between like Stephen King's work and Joe Hill's work. That's pretty cool. But in August 2017, this year, May 30th of this year, just a couple months ago, it was reported that Hulu passed on Lock and Key. Apparently, they filmed a pilot, roughly, or filmed some of it, I think. And they had passed on it, and it was announced that Netflix was nearing a new contract with Hughes and Hill coming into it. And then it was just announced, I want to say extremely recently, I want to say it was in July, somewhere here. Yeah, in July, it was announced that Netflix has given official full order for the first season of 8 episodes to be written by Joe Hill, produced by Joe Hill, along with Hughes and Colette and Avery, and then Avery and Hughes will be active showrunners as well as producers. And I believe Andy and Barbara Muschietti, the husband and wife, they're set to produce as well. I think. I can't remember. But I think they're still involved too. He's not directing it. He's just producing it. So the cool thing about it is Joe Hill is actually writing. I think he's set to write everything, him and Colette, I think. I can't remember if I saw that right or not. It doesn't actually matter. But it is being officially made, first season at least, by Netflix, into 8 episodes, which I think they can just drag the first volume, the first 6 issues into 8 episodes, no problem. But Netflix is a really good home for it. It could have been made anywhere, but Netflix has very big magic behind them. But I think the biggest thing there is, I don't think anybody is still attached to stay from anything else. I do know the announcement of who's going to play Bodie Locke, oddly enough. His name is Jackson Robert Scott. If you don't know the name, don't blame you. But he played Georgie Dembro in last year's wildly popular It Chapter 1. And he's going to reprise that role as Georgie in It Chapter 2 later next year. And I believe that's him being attached to it is all from Andy Muschietti, because he loved that kid on set, and that kid is fucking amazing in It and terrifying all at the same time. So I think he'd be a really good Bodie Locke. He's 10. Bodie should be around, I think is around that same age, if not a little younger, but he could play it younger, because he's a very small kid. But I think he'd be a really good Bodie Locke, because he's a very good actor. It's from what I've seen in the one movie I've seen him in, which is It. I think it's his only movie that he's in, I think. But that's it for Lock and Key. So look forward to that next year. I believe they're scheduling it for release next year. Production's got to start pretty fucking soon, if not already. Pre-production's definitely already set. And Joe Hill doesn't have to do a lot to do it. He has to organize the issue scripts and rewrite them into 8 episodes versus 6 issues, but Joe Hill can do it. I believe in him. Plus, he has 2 books he's getting ready to release, which is crazy. We don't even know anything about. I don't know anything about yet. But anyways, that's it for Lock and Key. As for what I've been reading lately, since I bring that up at the end of these here episodes, I just finished the novelization of Solo, a Star Wars story. If you listen to the main podcast, I am. Well, that was a weird little jump that I didn't want to do. I loved the movie itself, and I read a Force Awakens novelization. I really would need to read the Rogue One and the Last Jedi adaptations too. They do add a lot because you get perspectives from characters and insight that isn't always delivered well through the moving pictures. But I think the big thing about this one is it gives you more insight into the character's progression. One of them is a big thing that people started speculation after the movie, that Han Solo is not as good a pilot as everyone says he is or everyone thinks he is, and it's just more of show, because the fact that, spoiler alert if you haven't read the book or seen the movie, shame on you, that L3, who was the droid co-pilot to Donald Glover's amazingly acted Lando Calrissian, young Lando Calrissian, was her brain with all of her navigation was put into the Millennium Falcon and link together to give, because she was used as their navigation, to give the now famous navigation that the Millennium Falcon has. And people are like, oh, she's actually the one that steers the ship, blah, blah, blah. She's a nav computer. She's nothing else. And it's explained in the book because you actually get to learn about him in the Imperial Navy flying, and you hear about how spectacular he is at flying, so much so that he's getting, at the point you get, you start hearing about it in the series, he's getting ready to be kicked out of the Navy and sent to infantry, into the military, because he is responsible for two wrecked fighters, even though he wasn't flying them. Hilarious, hilarious way of doing it. But the whole point is he pulled a maneuver that was so dangerous and so incapable of anybody else that two other pilots tried to match him to beat him out, and they wrecked their ships. Hilarious. You learn more about Kira's backstory and what happened to her between when she got left on Corellia to where he met her in the service of Dryden Vos, which is pretty cool. Not that it puts any more character behind Beckett, but you get to see you get to hear from Beckett's point of view and what he thinks of Han and Chewie as they join along with him. But for the most part, they don't add a whole lot. Just like the adaptation of The Force Awakens didn't add a whole lot of extra story. It just added a couple extra things, like the stuff with Poe and things like that. But otherwise, it's a really fun read if you like the movie and you like reading the Star Wars books. I do recommend it. It has all the sound effects and music, and Mark Thompson does an amazing job reading it, because I did do the whisper sync to burn through it, because I did pre-order Solo, a Star Wars story on digital, and I wanted to finish the book before I rewatched the movie for seventh time or something like that, because I saw it a bunch in the theaters. So that's that. That's what I've been reading. Up next for next week's episode, to wrap up September, we're going to be talking about Why the Last Man and the adaptation of that coming to television quite soon. I shouldn't say quite soon. It's going to be next year. But a little more about that. Next week, here on this same podcast, and again, you've been listening to The Awesome Cody. I am your host, Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.